Hey everybody, this is Adam, and this is an editor's note. Following episode, Preacher, starring Flacco, Robert, Trey, Devin, Brian, and myself, is a little graphic. I wasn't going to put a little warning at the beginning of this, but after finishing editing it, I decided it's going to need an editor's note. It's a little over the top. It's a great show. It's very convincing. It's very entertaining. But be careful with this one. Now, don't go thinking that this is all we are. We're just a bunch of guys having fun, talking about books. If you haven't read Preacher, you might want to hold off. If you have read Preacher, you're going to enjoy it. Now, also, if you haven't read Preacher, it's convincing. So if you need some convincing, this is convincing. But anyway, anybody who's ready to move on, enjoy the rest of the show.
All right, so fuckers, what's up?
Dude, this is the most unsavory gathering for podcasts we've had in forever. We are drinking, we are smoking, we are cursing. All we need Devin to do is call his bitches up and get them over here.
Are you trying to say that shit, man?
Are you trying to say that this is the hive of scum and villainy? Patience, my friend.
Call some sluts, man.
We have to get the show done first.
What's a podcast without sluts?
If they come in here, the show just...
Bitches love nerds, right?
It's him to be square.
So with us, we got Devin, we got Trey, we got Brian, we got Robert special guesting in, and we got the return of Flacco special guesting in as well.
All right.
And we're going to be apparently drinking and smoking and talking about a great Garth Ennis book.
Pass me the Quaaludes.
So fucking brace yourself.
Yeah, you might need to put two bumpers on this show. Like, if you weren't paying attention to the first bumper that says we're going to cuss,
listen to this one. Here it is. Hey, pig fuckers. We're going to be swearing, so pull your heads out of your pussies and realize this isn't Puritan fucking television or any of that. Turns out there's more past the Bible. So,
hey, so, Flacco, have you heard about this Preacher thing, man?
So who's a fan of Mark Steven Johnson?
Oh, man. Oh, Lord. Well, I guess we're going to talk about Garth Ennis and Steve Dillon's Preacher from Vertigo, which got put out in, the late 90s?
Yeah.
Early aughts. That sounds about right.
Aughts,
right?
Is that what we're calling this decade?
That's what I'm calling it.
It's the aughts.
But you got a problem with that?
Aughts? No, I'm just asking.
Do this. We can do this right now.
So, I don't really have much to say about Preacher. I didn't like it.
And that's our show, folks.
Right. Tune in next time.
Tip your waitress.
No.
Tune in next time with the crusty bartender says.
I guess, you know, my experience with Preacher was I read Preacher the first week that it came out, and the first week that it came out, my Uncle Richie, whose kid was reading comics, bought it and actually showed it to me and was like, here, I want you to read this, you know? And I read it, and I didn't get it. I didn't know. I think I was 17, 18 years old at the time. You know what I mean? Just didn't get it, man. Just didn't get the first issue of Preacher, man. And, you know, just thought, what is this? Where are my superheroes? Where's Darkhawk? You know, where's Sleepwalker?
But it takes, like,
you know what I mean?
It totally takes like six or seven covers to get into it.
Absolutely. But you know what I'm saying? So I just, I wrote it off. And, as months kind of progressed and stuff, and, you know, as the books I was reading, Preacher was not among them. And I met someone, he had been a friend of mine for a while. And was just like, hey, I was going to Miami. Was just like, I want you to read Preacher. Gives me like four trades of Preacher, which had come out, maybe three. But I went to Miami, and on the way down there, I read Preacher, and it was it. I was hooked. And from that point on, I read Preacher Monthly, which I think was up to like issue 30. And let me tell you something. Preacher Monthly is like a difficult fucking, you know what I mean? Like, that was the book that I waited for every single month. So I you know, all you people that got to fucking read Preacher all at once, you know what I mean? Like, that's bullshit, man. I had to wait 30 fucking days in between every fucking issue, you know, and that was, it was
Afghanistan. It was easy. My bad.
Whoops. It was, I just remember, you know, when that book was coming out, it was the book that everyone in that shop was talking about. You know what I mean? It was the book that people that I knew that didn't read fucking comics were coming in and talking about fucking Preacher and hearing about Preacher. And I think that's one of the biggest fucking appeals of Preacher is that, like, I think it's, you can give that book to anyone that isn't going to be offended religiously. You know what I mean? And that book will absolutely, you know.
And even those that are. Yeah. And even those that are.
It is. That book is so fucking funny, man.
It's
so
it's funny. It's great. And it's
funny.
Weird. You know, you say it's a book for anybody. It's like I was heavy into Vertigo when that title started coming out, and I missed the first couple issues of it. It was like, oh well, just it's like another Vertigo title. I don't need to pick anything else. It wasn't that big a deal. And then like a week later, I see like Janine Garofalo is on MTV talking about Preacher, and there are people talking about it, like Samuel L. Jackson pops up, and they're doing a typical Samuel L. Jackson kind of interview where they're like, oh, so we hear you read comics. He's like, oh, yeah, Frank Miller's
hat backwards.
Yeah, wearing the hat, yeah.
Called somebody a bitch.
And they're like, and he's like, yeah, you know, Frank Miller, got to read Frank Miller, and Preacher's, you know, good shit's coming out right now. And it's like, God knows, why are all these stars talking about Preacher? And I missed it. And by then it's like, well, fuck, it's too late to pick it up. And actually didn't even read it at all. Until a week ago, when we decided we were going to do this show.
We pulled the Devin on you and gave you all of it at once.
Well, and I totally understand what Flock is saying.
But thanks for the beer.
I managed to plow through the majority of that shit in like 3 days, including one marathon 12-hour session where I got off of work and stayed up till like 7 o'clock in the morning reading it because I didn't want to stop.
I had a couple of those this past week. You know, 5:30 for me. Well, I can't beat 7. But.
Yeah. It's,
me too. I mean, I was fucking, but you know.
But I was thinking about comics.
I had the luck of coming across Preacher when I first started hanging out with Flacco, who had the trade, the first volume of Preacher, and I used to sit over there and I'd just pick up stuff and read it, and I read it and I was like, man, this is the shit, man, give me more. And Flacco says, I don't have any more. Kind of fucked up shit is that, right?
Like a fucking drug
dealer. Because I read the first like 30 issues. I didn't buy them, you know?
Here, man, read this Preacher. You're going to dig it. Okay.
Yeah.
Only that's all I have.
That's all I have. First taste is free. You got to pay for the rest.
So then
we've all learned that the hard way.
So then I ended up going. I went to a comic shop and then I was buying the trades one a week. I would buy it and I would read it and I'd have to force myself to wait until the next week so I just wouldn't spend all of my money that week and then not be able to pay my bills and shit.
Yeah. Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
What is Preacher? I mean, what is it? Is it a Western? Is it a character study? Is it a religious meditation? I mean, what is this book exactly?
It's everything but the latter, I would argue.
It are everything but a religious meditation.
Yeah. I think it would be the antithesis of a religious meditation.
Yeah.
Is if anything, it is to meditate the idea of denouncing or, you know, not necessarily organized religion so much as Christianity.
I mean, well,
Yeah. That's how I'd put it.
Well, you know, I mean, but is that what you walk away from with Preacher? You know what I mean?
Like, no, I stopped paying attention to stuff like that when I was like 15 because I stopped.
For me, I think the religious.
Well,
no. Yeah. For me, when it comes to Preacher, it's about, I think it's about Cassidy and Jesse and Tulip.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And really, you know, kind of the bigger themes all kind of come with all of them, right? I mean, it's love, redemption, vengeance, you know, and to a kind of weirder extent, maybe the Saint of Killers can be kind of thrown in.
Yeah,
there,
I was going to say one of the cool things about Ennis is the secondary characters blend in. Oh, excuse me, with Preacher specifically, the secondary characters blend in so well with the main characters that you know, it's sometimes hard to differentiate.
Yeah, it's almost unfair to call them secondary.
Yeah,
you know,
totally.
Because
totally.
Every you know, and every single character in this book totally moves past their description of what they are. You know what I mean? Cassie's a vampire. He's like no Our vampire space. Ever fucking cared about. You know what I mean? Tulip's an assassin. Tulip isn't a fucking assassin. You know what I mean? Like, I don't see Tulip as... When you get Tulip's whole story, you know what I mean? Which isn't until way later on, she becomes such a fucking more awesome character. You know what I mean? Like
the characters never stop growing.
What about Arsface, man? Arsface.
Yeah, absolutely right.
Yeah,
absolutely right. You know, Jesse, you know, he's a preacher. Mm-hmm. Dude, that guy is so much more... That guy's a fucking cowboy. You know what I mean? He's not a fucking preacher. You know, Star's the villain. You know what I mean? Like he's more than the fucking villain in that book. You know what I mean? He's you totally love that guy's story. And in some parts, you even like Hair Star. You know,
right.
I mean, he loses it at the fucking end, but you know, it's I don't know, dude. There's just everybody in that book just steps so beyond like what their sort of bullshit description. It's so hard to describe Preacher. You know what I mean? It's about you know, it's a book about a guy who's trying to find God and make him answer for his fucking crimes.
I think
you
make a really good point in that how everybody starts. The description you would give them if you handed somebody the first trade. When you hand in the last trade, everybody has made such a radical journey they're not that same person anymore.
Yeah. It's like that first trade is Robert brought up the point that, you know, maybe it wasn't really Preacher certainly does not pick up its stride in the first trade, you know, yeah. And everything from like, you look at the art in the first issue to the art at the end of the last issue of the first trade, Dylan's, you know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? He strides, fucking, dude, you know, by the end of that book, Dylan has this style that's just so fucking crisp and clean
even
fucking perfect.
Even though,
you know
like,
what I mean?
When Jesse Custer cries at the end, it kind of looks like somebody came in his eye.
That's fine. Also, he can't draw dogs worth of shit. Cause Skeeter looks like crap.
Not dogs and not like any sort of liquid whatsoever.
Other than that.
Unless, you know, unless it's that, beer
and that first arc, and I can remember reading when I was reading that first arc, you know, you end that first book and they have the story when they go to New York and they have, you know, he has a friend that turns out to be a serial killer. And you know, even that, you know, I finished that and I'm just kind of like, well, what is this? This is the awesome book that everyone's telling me, you know, it's all about. And it's really until you get to that second book, which is about Jesse's history, and you learn about Jesse, you know, and as soon as you learn about Jesse, dude, that character just becomes, you know what I mean? Like so fucking like, real and well-rounded, you know what I mean? And like the whole idea of you know, why is this guy a preacher when he doesn't seem anything like a fucking preacher? Why is this
your
guy...
Your perception of him completely flips.
You know, when you see what this guy fucking been through, you know what I mean? And the whole stuff with like, you know, him and Tulip, you know, and him explaining why he left her in the first place, right, you know what I mean? Right. When that second book hits, that book hits its stride. And then when you go back and read that first book after knowing everything that you go on later, you know what I mean? That second story about being in New York, about Cassidy's friend that he thought was his friend and ends up stabbing him in the back and wasn't who he thought he was. Dude, that story resonates throughout the entire, you know, becomes very, very important. You know what I mean? Certainly. And even though they actually, it's something that, you know what I mean? Like upon this latest reading it, you know what I mean? I was just like, I wrote it down. I was like, holy shit, this is Cassidy's story. You know what I mean? And it's actually references it later on, you know, when Cassidy and Jesse are having their confrontation at the end, you know, and you know, I was just like, you know, yes, that's why that's there. Because he knew how this book was going to end at the beginning. You know what I mean? He knew that this was all going to come full circle. And, you know, it's just sort of a brilliant planning. You know,
I think everybody here seems to be in agreement that it took the book a while to find its stride and figure out where it's going. And I'm thinking that might just be a function of needing to get some exposition out of the way, lay everything out. And then let it go, you know, when
which,
you read
which is
Preacher.
Ballsy. I mean, if you think about like trying to perpetuate a comic book that's, you know, that is basically, you know, a capitalist endeavor, you know what I'm saying?
I think it also kind of speaks to the fact that it was a Vertigo book because you have time to do that. Right. If DC was expecting this to be like a mainstream book, nobody would have gotten this time
which is why Vertigo rocks in general. Yeah.
But see, the thing is, as the reader, you get kind of tricked into realizing some of these deeper and grander characterizations, and the way that Ennis holds on to you is he gives you these moments of pure... There are moments where, as the reader, you're just going, oh my God, that might be the most fucked up thing I've ever seen on a printed page outside of Robert's apartment.
And how many times do you think you would have said that while you're reading Preacher? About 80?
Yeah.
And who'd have thought you'd have seen that many fucked up stick figures in my apartment? You know what I mean?
But, you know, I think it speaks to Preacher that it was able to do, in the context of this book, Ennis was able to give you these really shocking moments. We're talking about a guy fucking a giant meat puppet. We're talking about Hare Star's tribulations, which run from having his leg eaten by inbred redneck cannibals.
Chunts. Chunt brothers.
Right.
Forgot about the Chunt brothers.
You know, an issue that actually opens up with a full splash page shot of Hairstar's crotch, which is minus a penis.
Oh my God. Yeah. It's got a valve on it. That's just so gross, dude.
It's awful, but we're able to look at that shock stuff, though, and that definitely keeps you interested. You're like, what the fuck is this all about? But he's able to get something.
Like you said, that definitely keeps you interested. What kind of shit are you doing?
Right. But he's able to do something artistic, and he's able to do something with the characters and create a real story. And the schlock becomes, or let's say the schlock, the shock becomes secondary. It becomes something that you're not, you see it and it's still cool,
which is exactly
why you're reading the book.
As it should be. Yeah, totally. It should be a secondary thing.
There's so much substance to Jesse Custer, you know, and his history is just so fucking awesome. You know, everything from like his relationship to his dad, which like defines who he is.
Awesome,
To the punishments that he went through, the coffin, to being raised by the guy that killed his father. Being raised to be a badass hard kid that like can't cry, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
to his fucking insane hallucinations with John Wayne, you know, who's
which was a fucking awesome
character. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. You know what I mean? When the Duke shows up, man, it's just like, pull your head out of your ass, son. You know, anytime he shows up, it's like, yes, you know, John Wayne is the shit, yeah. You know? And,
which, I wasn't familiar with John Wayne, but, I mean, I knew who John Wayne was, you know, but I didn't really know his impact that he had on
so many people. I mean, I think you really need to be an older guy.
With our generation. You know? Yeah, totally. You know?
But,
Come on. Come on.
Well, I mean, that shit hit home
That's
with
not
me,
our John Wayne. You know?
I'm not going to apologize.
Oh. I mean, I watched a shit ton of John Wayne movies growing up.
Seriously? I'm not going to apologize for being young and beautiful old man.
I mean, you can watch a shit ton of John Wayne movies, but unless you grew up while the John Wayne movies are coming out,
yeah,
you don't really
totally.
Get it.
And you know, you look at kind of like movie stars today, and they're like young 25-year-old hot fucking, you know, studs that are ripped to their fucking core. You know what I mean? John Wayne was like always just this old dude, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
even
you
know, he was young,
not gorgeous. Yeah, right.
He was the fucking one-eyed Batman,
you know what I mean?
Man.
Cowboy, you know,
at 25.
Like, because you know, and you watch all those old movies, 50s and 60s, and you know, all the heroes are like older professors with a fucking pipe and shit like that. You know, and it was such like a weird society thing. You know what I mean? Where these older kind of grizzled, you know what I mean? When kids gave a fuck about being cowboys when they grew up, you know what I mean?
When shit like Shame
don't
came out
fuck anymore, you know?
For real. Shame was Shame even had
Al
an impact
Ladd,
on
man.
Me.
Yeah, you know that's a mean? Fucking awesome movie.
Yeah. Oh, which leads into another thing. Like Bill Hicks actually has this thing. He goes on about Shane and how like America is Jack Palance. You know, like, pick up the gun.
Yeah.
You know, throws the gun at the farmer's feet and is like, pick up the gun. You know, and then he shoots him and he's like, you saw him. He had a gun.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, like, which is a beautiful intro into...
Can we get to that later? Can we talk to Bill Hicks
a little bit later? Sorry, my bad.
It's all good. It's all good. I know. I do too, man. I really fucking want to talk about Bill Hicks because it's actually something I really forgot. It's amazing. No, it's cool. But you know, at this point in the story, you know, in the second volume, you really learn a lot about Jesse Custer. Some crazy ass shit happens, which, you know, I mean, I think we all pretty surprised when Tulip dies.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. And then you know, gets brought back in the next fucking issue. You know, whatever, and that becomes like a repeating thing. Is you know, all these characters end up dying. And
note to listeners: read this shit before you listen.
Yeah, no shit, right? But you know, just the whole
we should have had that at
the whole storyline about him like dealing with his family is fucking amazing, dude. You know,
that,
and, like,
that's definitely where that when we talk about where the book hits its stride, it's with that chunk, so that little arc, where you start figuring out where it is that Jesse Custer comes from. Yeah. That's where the book,
and then he kills his family. you know what I mean, and then he kills his family, and you cheer, so fucking great, dude.
Hell, he fucking lets out a big yee-haw.
And that's after that that's when we get introduced to Hairstar and the Grail, you know, which becomes like what the villains of the book, I guess we could say, you know what I mean, like
villains
pretty much.
Yeah, but
even they have their hero moments.
Absolutely, man. Hairstar is, you know, turns out to be, you know, I mean, this is He's such an awesome bad guy.
Let's talk about Hairstar's journey. I actually wound up feeling kind of bad for Hairstar because his life just gets exponentially worse as that book goes on. Yeah. You know, it opens up. Here he comes. He's this badass. He's going to get shit taken care of. He loses an ear. He receives a knife wound to the top of his head that makes his head look like a pecker.
First, he gets raped by a fat Englishman.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah. I forgot about that. Right. And then, of course, the leg gets eaten by the cannibal rednecks.
The sex detectives, dude.
Which I never really found out the difference between a regular detective and a sex detective. Did they really get into that
at all?
Let
me show you.
I think Locke's a gay sex.
One gets paid in blowjobs.
But at the end of volume two is a really important moment of the book. Also, one of the funniest fucking moments in the whole book is when the Grail decides Star has the, you know, his plan for Jesse Custer. And I think we also meet Jesus' descendants at some point.
One of the most fucked up ideas in the entire book.
So brilliant.
Which, But I'm kind of scared for new readers that with, you know, since this has come out, all of the Holy Grail, Holy Blood, and Da Vinci Code shit has come out. Yeah. So that idea has kind of been done a whole lot since... Yeah. Preacher had its run.
This is definitely a different take
on
it.
Yeah, it's different taste.
But this is how this is just inbred retardedness.
Yes. Yeah, inbred,
disgusting,
divine,
shit throwing,
yeah,
you know,
demigod, monkey
retarded.
I mean, this would be a good point. I mean, Robert kind of mentioned it, but this would be a good point to mention that if you watch the 700 Club, this is probably not in the comic book series.
Yeah, well, I mean, but like, I mean, I'm religious, but you know, I mean,
yeah,
I keep
you're very open minded about.
I keep
your
an open mind about things, and it is what it is. You know what I'm saying to me? Like,
exactly.
Right. The thing about the biggest thing about Preacher to me is like it's and really with any book that I really fucking love is like. It doesn't really matter what exactly is going on in the book, but like what's happening with the characters and everything, like the journeys that they make and, you know, the way that they evolve themselves and, you know, the shit that happens to them. I mean, you could have some outlandish bullshit going on, but what matters is the fucking people in it, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Well, I want to say...
And I'm able to appreciate it.
First off, I'd like to point out that you also made it through Chronicles of Wormwood.
Yeah, I did. Kudos for that. Also, Jody warned me about that one.
And second off, it's like, I think the worst, most fucked up characters in this book are God and the angels. They're fucked up characters.
Well, Garth Ennis doesn't like God very much.
He treats them like he treats superheroes.
As far as villains go, I mean, they are assholes.
But that's another thing, too. You know what I mean? Like he treats, you know what I mean, religion like he also treats superheroes. And I love superheroes, you know what I mean? Yeah. But I'll still read Garth Ennis because I fucking love Garth Ennis, even though, you know, I don't hate superheroes like he does.
Right.
But
he is just like his best characters, man. Like, he's just the son of a bitch, but you love him.
Yeah. One of my favorite moments in the book was at the beginning, Cassidy and Jesse have a fight, and then Cassidy turns around and tries to rescue Jesse anyway, which is kind of the beginning of like their friendship, which becomes something really seminal to the book, is their relationship with each other.
And you don't I didn't expect it. I thought they were going to be at odds the whole series.
Right, right. And one of my favorite parts of that fucking book is when they're at that crazy party, and then the Grail comes in and goes to kidnap Jesse Custer, and he's like, "I'm Jesse Custer." And Cassidy's like, "I'm Jesse Custer." And then he's like, "God damn it." You know, and he like does his best fucking Texas impersonation and shit, and they take him to fucking, you know, Israel, the fucking Masada, wherever it is, the fucking Europe or whatever, you know what I mean? And it's like, God, this guy just sacrificed himself for, you know, this fucking, you know, guy that he really gives a fuck about. You know what I mean? He just gave up his fucking life for his friend, you know, and at that point
he just had this monster fight with and nasty things are said.
And at that point, you know what I mean, this sort of relationship between Cassidy and Jesse becomes like, wow,
yeah,
dude.
But that,
you know,
that's
what I mean?
I hate to say this, but I don't know how many Irish, like fresh off the boat Irish cats that you guys know, but it's the typical Irish romantic mentality. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not none, really?
No, I don't know any Irish
people
on boats.
Well,
he said Irish
off the boats because he knows a few Puerto Ricans. Anyway.
Those are rafts.
Zing.
What I'm saying, though, is it's like a flawed friendship sort of thing, you know, like the fundamentally shit. I'm gonna have to say romantic, you know, like bromance. You know what I'm saying? That's what the
you're
fuck
right.
it is.
No, you're right.
That's what the fuck
that's
it is.
That's what it
you
is.
Know what I'm
man.
Saying? Yeah,
you know?
Gibson and Glover, fucking
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
I mean,
Tarrant,
like
Tarrant.
Everything else.
A brother from another mother, like Mel Gibson and Danny Glover, right? Yeah, totally. And that's fucking, you know, typical Mick Catholics. You know what I'm saying?
I'm not saying
they all want to fuck each other. You know what I mean? I'm just saying that they're all fucking like they're boys to the end, you know, with the exception of their own personal flaws that they bring to the table that are not you know, all encompassing like bros before us.
Well,
you know,
and
what
the
I mean?
Thing is, it's a very messy relationship, and that's why when reading Preacher, it rings very true. There is no nice bow tied summation of their relationship at the end of the series. That just doesn't happen that way.
There's nothing in this book that's easy for anybody.
Right. The bottom line is throughout the course of that relationship, they do great, great things for each other, and they fuck each other over really, really bad.
But does Jesse really fuck over Cassidy?
Mm-mm.
Yeah. Not like Cassidy fucks over.
Yo, this is the like actually the out of all of these things that out of all of the crazy things that have happened in Preacher, one of the craziest things that was the most like necessary, like it needed suspension of disbelief was when Jesse Custer caught Cassidy's hand once he tried to punch him.
No,
you know what I'm saying? No, for real.
Cassidy's like ripping the tops off of cars.
Yeah, dude.
Come on,
Cassidy,
dude.
Cassidy's strong as fuck. And
they
all of a sudden,
totally
the guy
addressed that.
Well, they addressed because he punches him in the hand.
Because he broke his hand. And it was like.
He broke every single bone in his hand.
Oh, my God. Like seriously, I'm saying, like, I don't see how, like, that is humanly possible. But, you know, you're not just going to stop it. You know what I'm saying?
I just don't see how it's possible for a human to catch a vampire's punch. I just don't. It's unrealistic.
Well played, Adam. Well fucking played.
Right, dollar bin Mythbusters.
I'm saying like, dollar bin Mythbusters.
I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah, it's not that he's catching a vampire's punch. It's that, like, you know, if you're going to have this take place in everyday reality, you know, the people aren't going to start fucking, you know, pissing out of their ears.
I don't know.
There's fundamental physics involved that I think would.
I think everyday reality is kind of a stretch.
I'm so glad I'm leaving in like five minutes.
For the mythology of Preacher, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's some crazy fucking goofy shit that's going on in that book, man. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like the mythology of the angels and all that stuff like that, you know, it's...
Yeah,
a little grain of salt. You know.
Well, you know, it's something that we haven't really mentioned at all is that Jesse has a superpower, for lack of a better way of putting it, that is so subtly addressed as to make you even wonder if he's actually got this power that's in him. You know, his power is basically people do what he tells them to do.
The word of God.
He's got the word of God.
You know, the cool thing about that kind of is he doesn't use it all the time, you know? he doesn't take advantage of it.
There's so many times in this book where there's situations where it's like, just use the word of God, and he just whips their ass.
right. And
that guy's tough. You know?
And it's something that I kind of wanted to see them address a little bit, because where I thought they were going with it was, you know, Jesse decides, you know, it's just not right that I make these people, you know, that I make things the way I want them to be. I kind of half expected it throughout his travels that he'd sort of figure out that maybe that's where God was coming from. I kind of thought that was the direction the book was going to go, where Jesse's like, yeah, just because I have the ability to do all this stuff, I don't fucking use it all the time. Maybe that's what God's thinking. It doesn't go in that direction at all.
That's really interesting, man. Yeah, something I never really considered.
I hadn't really thought of that.
Yeah, me neither.
Pretty fucking cool. And they don't mess with it at all. They don't fuck with it at all. And I don't know whether that's cool or disappointing, because I don't want to read my ideas.
I mean, I think it's because God's an asshole in this book. You know what I mean? Yeah, like,
exactly.
And that's his character.
It's because
Ennis
doesn't like him. And so he'd rather focus on Jesse's, like, fucking determination.
Although, damn, that would be pretty cool if he fucking did. You know what I mean? Like, if maybe even the stuff with God was a little more ambiguous at the end.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Than, like, get shot in the head.
And
so it's kind of weird.
Instead, it is pretty fucking weird. But instead, we get him, like, focusing on, you know, Jesse's determination and everything, like in just like what kind of what Robert was talking about a little while ago, when he catches his fucking hand, he breaks all the fucking bones in his hand, the same thing pops up like later, you know, or you know, whatever, later. when he's fighting him at the end, and he fucking gets that sucker punch kick to the fucking chest, and Cassidy's like, look, dude, stay the fuck down. He's like, I fucking heard your fucking breastplate, you know, fucking break.
Yeah.
He's like, if you stand up, it could pierce your lungs and your heart and you could fucking die. And fucking Jesse's like, fuck you, and just stands up and is like, you son of a bitch. And he's like, man, what the fuck did they make you out of? The fuck are you lads made out of, or some shit that he says like that. But that's what Ennis tries to, like, focus on, is, like, you know, I guess human determination.
Right.
Like,
absolutely.
As opposed to, like, you know, dependent on something divine and everything like that, which makes me think that Garth Ennis is kind of like Lex Luthor.
Well, you know. But it's like Jesse Custer's mission, his goal through this entire series, pretty much, is to kill God.
Well, no, it's
to
not
make
even
him pay
it's
for
make him answer.
Exactly.
He wants to hold him accountable.
So, calling him accountable. His mission in the book is to call out God. You know, if that's not like a fucking goal,
he just wants to know why.
Yeah.
He just wants to know
why.
He's
thinking big.
And
dear
God,
this is Garth Ennis.
And God, it keeps showing up and threatening him, sort of, in ways, because he's afraid of Jesse Custer, sort of. And that's crazy. Yeah. To like be that determined and that God is fearful of you, sort of.
Well, that's a big thing in the book, man. It's why I love the Saint of Killers so much. That character.
Have we talked about him yet?
I don't think we have.
Just barely mentioned.
Just a little blurb. You got the Saint of Killers, who is just the meanest man who ever lived, period. This guy shows up. You know that he is an awesome badass. Spoiler alert, by the time the series is over, he has managed to resurrect himself just by the power of his own badassery.
Badassity.
Manages to kill the devil, and then by the series end, kill God, and kill a whole lot of shit in between those two points.
A whole lot of shit.
To toss it back into the Western idea, give everybody an idea, the Saint of Killers is Clint Eastwood from every Western he's ever been in, combined. That's the character.
Yeah. Well, all their toughness combined, you know.
Well, and they put him in these anachronistic situations where, you know, the Saint of Killers, who is basically a cowboy, he's wearing a duster, he's got a couple of six shooters, and he's going up against like four tanks. Right? And he whoops the fuck out of these tanks.
There's so much in this book that God, I'd love to talk about, and we should do like a 4-hour show sometime on Preacher. But if we could just, you know, I know we haven't exactly been going chronologically forward or whatever, but I do want to say that as much as I love Preacher, I think the crescendo of Preacher for me, where it's just like the fucking point where like almost everything at that point just comes to this fucking insane head, is War in the Sun, man. And War in the Sun is such a fucking amazing story, dude. It's the one you were just talking about where the Saint of Killers winds up in the fucking desert and the Saint of Killers fighting those tanks and like, everybody's story just comes to this fucking crashing moment. And I can remember just rereading this, you know what I mean, a couple of nights ago, you know, and I'm just like, this book is awesome. This book is amazing, dude. You know what I mean? For every second of that shit, from when that shit first starts to, you know, him fighting these tanks to the shit with, you know, a hair star, like throwing a fucking nuclear warhead, you know what I mean?
Right.
And just like spitting and being like, not enough gun. You know what I mean? Like, dude, you're so fucking Texan, it's ridiculous, man. That fucking, you know, it's just so much of that book just like builds and builds and builds to that fucking story. That you know, it's like what winds up being the resolution at the end of the book, you know what I mean, is so much of a quieter resolution. Like yeah. I was kind of like, damn, how are you gonna fucking top a nuclear warhead in the middle of America, you know what I mean? And it's like, well, he doesn't bother to try to top it.
You don't top it.
He just kind of wraps everything up.
Right. It ends a little bit. It ends really with the confrontation between, you know, Jesse and Cassidy, really. You know what I mean? It's almost
and
like,
how interesting that, you know, the question, you know, that you've got to be wondering as the reader throughout the majority of the series is, what's going to happen when Jesse Custer meets up with God? That's what you're wondering
right.
about.
Yeah. Right.
And it is so, I mean, the way it winds up, it's like there's no...
Well, the confrontation between Jesse and God, I think, was actually fucking awesome, because A, it wasn't the final confrontation, but when we actually see them face to face, A, God eats Jesse's eyeball,
right,
and B, he fucking spits in God's face, and which is a moment that I completely forgot about, man, but I was reading this book, and I was just like, holy shit, you are a tough fucking guy, man. You are as tough as they fucking come, man. You know, God is holding you by the throat, and your only response is to spit in his fucking face, dude. I'm just like, damn, dude, I would back Jesse's play. You know what I mean? And it's like, you know, it's like, this is not a person, you know? This is not a real person, but like, that shit's fucking great, dude. It's like, it's almost like, that guy is just defined by all these one-liners. He has all these sick one-liners, you know what I mean? Where it's just like, it's his whole philosophy on life. It's like this simple, boiled-down, cowboy fucking philosophy that's always like so brilliant and so honest and so like, you know, to the point. And I'm not saying like everything that Jesse says and does, you know, there's stuff in the book that's, you know, that's just him to a fault, you know what I mean? Like, him being the way he is causes him a lot of fucked up problems that don't need to cause him.
Like abandoning,
you know?
Tulip a bunch of times.
You know, you say abandoning
well,
her.
Well, to protect her.
Well, you know, it's totally legit, yeah, you know, in a sense, man.
It's legit, but like, come on. call a spade a spade. He drugs the girl into unconsciousness and then runs away.
Right.
But I think you make a good. I think you make a good point. Is that he's kind of the typical Western cowboy character, where he is what he is. And that comes with a shitload of great qualities and a shitload of not so great qualities.
Yeah.
But he is that same. He's kind of like he's the constant part as far as behavior and stuff for everybody.
Yeah.
As we're talking, Devin is flipping through one, and one of my favorite moments is the Arseface world, where the sun is a giant puckered butthole, and all the people are walking around with puckered butthole faces. It's awesome.
There's so many little things. Like, I was flipping through one earlier, and I saw, like, one of the first times you see the Allfather or whatever, and he's fucking in there doing his, like, binge and purge thing, and he's got, like, the fucking regal, like, throat poker.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Just two fingers on the end of his stick.
Yeah.
I heard that's what Lindsay uses.
I had to let Trey borrow all these, so I wanted to make sure that I kind of had it in me to do this show and talk and stuff. So I grabbed the last volume, and I was like, I'm just going to flip through the pictures. It'll remind me what happens. The last volume actually ends with the summary, or begins with the summary of the entire series, which was awesome. I forgot that was there. It's like, check, there goes all that. And then, so I start flipping through. I probably got about 6 pages flipping through before I was like, oh yeah, I remember the scene. And I started reading it. I read the rest of the book. You know, it's hard not to, man.
Yeah, well, I got it.
It was great.
It is great.
It's worth it too.
I've got to speak a little bit on my personal favorite part of Preacher as a series. I have a deep personal disdain for goth kids, period. I just don't like them.
Right.
I just don't like them, which is a shame because Hot Topic has a lot of cool stuff in there. But I don't like goth kids at all. And there's a kind of a two-issue interlude, or it's a one-shot.
Yeah,
where Cassidy, an actual vampire, runs into this vampire Lestat wannabe and does to this guy everything that I want to do to goth kids. Like, I want to take him out, sit him down, give him a beer, and be like, dude, what the fuck are you doing? Why? Why are you doing this? Why are you doing this? And then when they can't be reasoned with, just, you know, torch them.
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah, definitely. Blood and Whiskey, that's what that was called.
Blood and Whiskey, there
yeah,
we
yeah.
go.
Yeah, that's great fucking...
Did you write down all the titles, or are you remembering these?
Both.
That's amazing.
You remember that you wrote it down.
What'd you guys think of the Salvation storyline?
Which one was that?
It was right... Seriously?
I don't know names of any of them.
It's after the atomic explosion, and it's essentially 6 months later, and Jesse's trying to figure out what to do next with his life, and he winds up in a small town.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, and, no, and, I was actually going to bring
some of the most craziest fucked up shit I've ever read in my life.
Yeah.
I loved that portion of it.
Here we're trying to interlude to it a couple times already.
The Dr. Savannah looking motherfucker or whatever.
He does look like Dr. Savannah.
The thing that distracted me about that, if I may, for one minute, Adam,
shoot,
is the book had become about specifically the relationship between Tulip, Cassidy, and Jesse for me up to that point. So when you've got this giant chunk of story that isn't exploring that at all, really, it felt like a divergence, and it felt like a divergence that went on too long. I'm not saying that it wasn't extremely cool, and I'm not saying that we didn't learn some cool things about Jesse and how he does business, but it didn't feel like part of the story proper. It felt like you could have chopped it out, kind of butted the series the left afterwards up against, and still been
fine. What about Jody?
Huh?
What about Jody?
What about Jody?
Christina. He finds his fucking mom in Salvation. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like. That's as personal a fucking, you know, part of like Jesse Custer's life as you could possibly imagine.
Absolutely.
This guy is like giving back
a huge
chunk of his fucking life, you know?
Yeah, I said as much. We learned, but it's not, you know, the book up to that point for me was about the interplay of these three characters, and it just wasn't happening.
The thing with
anymore.
Me there is I thought that, like you said, it was kind of like, it was, to me, it was like a deep breath that you take after reading so much book that was awesome, and you're just reading, and then you finally just go, and it feels good. It stood out. Mm-hmm. It was a different story, but it was still awesome, and it just kind of gave you your brain time to just relax a little, but still absorb all this newness. before continuing on.
You got to see like Jesse in like different situations, like even little stuff I loved about Salvation, like when he's like solving the dispute about the guys that steal the wood, the lumber.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Punch him in the face as hard as you can.
Yeah, he's like, no, do it like this. Bam! He lays the fucking guy out, dude. That's fucking brilliant, man. Fucking brilliant, you know? That Jesse's way works no matter what. You know?
Yep. But, I know, man, I kind of agree with you, Trey. I really liked that storyline because I really liked the, you know, him being in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
But I can see what you're saying, where it's kind of like a really long segue.
Yeah.
Outside of the story.
It's certainly not like that's lost on Garth Ennis, because the Duke shows up and basically tells Jesse as much. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah. You're just wasting time here, dude. You know what I mean? Like, you got shit to do. Let's figure out what's going fucking on now, you know?
Well, and I need to also, I guess, add that I'm kind of charmed that digression wound up lasting as long as it did, because I think that reflects life. I mean, if I was going to tell the story of any number of friends that I have, there would be, in many of those stories, year-long interludes where I didn't talk to them at all. And somehow it made kind of the sequence of events more real, I guess. There is this period of time where things are just fucked up.
I have years of my life that don't have anything to do with the rest of my life.
Like I said, I've been reading them in trade, so I've kind of been thinking them as sort of like broken down in that.
Yeah.
But at the end of the Salvation trade is one of my favorite stories. And it has to do about, I think it's pretty obvious that this book is, that this book is about, another portion of this book, we're talking about this, but what is this book about? You know, is it about the relationship between Jesse and Tulip? Is it about, you know, the quest for, you know, God being accountable and stuff like that? You know, all that good stuff. It's a lot of it is about Garth Ennis's ode to America, and how this guy feels about America. There's a ton of that in this book where it's like, you know, people talking about what this fucking country means to them. You know what I mean? It's such a weird, like, kind of Western feel to, you know what I mean?
Yeah, we didn't even talk about the fact that,
go ahead.
Garth Ennis isn't even American.
Yeah. Well, which is cool, because almost like he can idealize his shit as opposed to like, but at the same time, like,
and I remember thinking
he always, like, you know what I mean? He's like, sure, there's a lot of fucked up shit going on, man. Mm-hmm. He's like, you know what I mean? But like, you're missing the point. You know what I mean? You're missing the point. You know, like, no, you know, not everyone comes to this country and gets their fucking dreams. But the point is, the fucking opportunity's there. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's just, you know, all that good stuff. One of the, you know, craziest, most fucked up chapters in the history of America is the Vietnam War.
Right.
And the two times that Garth Ennis addresses this with stories about Jesse Custer's father, John, are two of the most amazing stories. Yes. And the last one about the Medal of Honor is fucking unreal, and how that story ends. You know, we're talking about holy shit moments, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And for the most part, you know, holy shit moments, I'm talking like, oh my God, that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like, for a moment where I was just like, this is amazing. I'm my life is richer for having read this fucking story is the part where at the end of that story, Spaceman's talking about those guys and he's like, what I really love are the statues of these guys over here looking like they just came out of some crazy fucking detail, walking over the corner, looking around and going, God damn, someone remembered. You know what I mean? Like, I was just like, Jesus fucking Christ, dude. You know what I mean? Like,
if
how
I can,
fucking, you know, like you take one of the worst chapters in the history of fucking America, you know, and boil it down to like what's really fucking important, you know, about that shit, you know what I mean? And it's like someone fucking remembered, you know what I mean? Like, and that's just fucking.
If I can hop up on a soapbox for just a brief moment,
there's one right there.
It's thank you. Creative people, whether it's in Hollywood or whether it's in comics, tend to lean to the left politically. All right, and this is just the world that we live in. I'm not saying it's good or bad. It's how it is. In Hollywood and in a lot of comics, it's become the norm to question any kind of American ideal out of the gate, sight unseen, in a very knee-jerk kind of way. It's gratifying, as an American, as somebody who loves comics and loves all creative endeavors, to have, and my God, only a foreigner could in an unabashed way, way, say, I love America. It's something that we don't really get a whole lot of in a lot of our mass marketed creative mediums. And it's one of the things about Preacher that I absolutely adore. Yes, Ennis is showing us fucked up things about America, but as you're saying, it's also a love letter. And he's saying, and like I said, in a very unabashed way, America is the coolest. It is awesome.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of hard to find that.
Yeah. It's like he says that not only with those crazy, like, you know, amazingly beautiful Vietnam stories, But do you remember the story that's just totally interlude with Jesse driving the truck to meet Tulip, and he picks up the sex detectives? You know what I mean? And the guy gives his speech about why America is so fucking awesome. You know what I mean? It's just like, it's great. It's great. You're right. And it totally takes an Irishman to fucking, you know, tell us how goddamn cool America is. You know what I mean?
But even then, he does it kind of like what we're saying is he's doing it from a lot of different perspectives other than his own. Yeah. He's not just breaking it down how he sees it. It's like, well, this guy would see it like this, and this guy would think America's awesome because of this.
And that's one of the things. It's like a lot. There's so many characters in this book. One of them's Irish, you know, and they're all the approaches and everybody are very true. They're very true approaches.
Yeah, absolutely.
From someone who's not even any of those people at
sure,
all.
Sure. I mean, look, man, who of us has not known somebody like Cassidy? Who of us has not known? I'm not saying a vampire.
No,
but
no.
Who of us
No.
Yeah, I get it.
But
who of us has not known?
I mean,
that
really,
guy who would fuck your girlfriend in a heartbeat,
man,
if you let him.
I mean, isn't that
when
this whole book changes? Isn't that when everything fucking like, where this book is just like,
the whole dynamic.
This is not what I thought it was going to be. You know what I mean? This is going to go someplace fucking insane, you know, is when fucking Cassidy just professes his love to Tulip, and you're like, what are you doing, you fucking ass? Yeah. I didn't know this was, you know, like, you're just as surprised as she is. You know
right,
what I mean? And
right.
then, you know, not only that, but man, that shit just builds and builds. And it's like, okay, maybe they could work this out. Okay, maybe, you know what I mean? And, you know, and you get the scene where fucking, you know, Cassie's holding on to Jesse out of the fucking plane, you know what I mean? And he's just like, oh, you know, he's burning to death, you know? And he's just like, let go, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
tell her
go.
I love her, you know? And then he uses the fucking word of God to make fucking Jesse let him go, you know what I mean?
Right.
It's just like, holy crap, you know, like, you think this would be a moment that would, like, you know, make this guy fucking, you know, remember this guy for the rest of his life. And it's almost like, oh man, am I fucking your girlfriend? You know what I mean? Like,
right.
You know what I mean? But you don't know that about Cassidy, you know? And it's interesting that, like, he uses the kind of, you know, the immortality of the vampirism, you know what I mean? To kind of be like, you know, hey, this guy has been around for a long time and just doesn't have consequences in life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're talking about people that, you know, are in your life that are like about that. And yeah, you know, I've met, you know, people that just don't think about fucking consequences. And that's, you know, that's crazy to me personally, you know what I mean? But they fucking exist and they're really fucking out there. And this is a guy that's never thought about consequences. And, you know, his vampirism makes his character so much deeper because he spent 100 years fucking people over and no one stopped him and been like, hey, motherfucker, you know what I mean? Like, stand the fuck up. You know
right.
I mean?
And, well, and Cassidy doesn't see himself as a bad guy. And I think that's why what's interesting about it is, you know, Cassidy sees himself as a victim of unfortunate circumstances.
Right. I think he kind of sees himself as a force of nature.
Ah, yes. I remember what it's
you know,
like
when it comes to
Trey
to Tulip in that situation. Fuck you. Cassidy doesn't think to himself, wow, this would be a really asshole thing to do for me to fuck this girl that's my best friend's girlfriend. Cassidy thinks more along the lines of, God, how unfortunate it is that I'm in love with this guy's girlfriend and I'm going to have to find a way to fuck her.
One of the things about it is
find a way to fuck her.
Yeah. It was a few days ago, I was having a conversation with my dad, and we were talking about, you know, kind of living forever or what it would be like to live forever.
Were y'all watching Highlander?
No, there can be only one. There should be only one. Anyway, well, we were talking about that, and I was just like, you know, I don't think I'd want to do it, man. And then I told him, I was like, there's this book Preacher, right? There's this character Cassidy, and he's got to watch everybody he befriends die.
Mm-hmm.
So he ends up, in a lot of ways throughout the book, they show how he will fuck over a friend, or he'll to distance himself, because he knows that person's going to die, and then he'll have been attached and be left behind.
Sure, and then all he's got to do is, you know, wait until that he can fuck that person over as hard and as long as he wants. All he's got to do is
just
wait.
It plays into him being a victim. You know?
Right,
exactly.
Wait until that person dies, attend the wake, and in grand Irish form, it's all okay. I went to the wake. You know, made my peace with the dead person that I fucked over, instead of thinking to himself, as a more decent character might do, maybe I shouldn't fuck him over to begin with.
Yeah.
And I know people like that, you know, to this
most
day
definitely.
I know people.
You know, as you know, it's, it, you know, I said, you know, I was surprised that the story doesn't get as big as it does in War of the Sun at the end, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But it really gets more important, you know what I mean, towards the end, like, holy shit moments, dude, when Jesse and Tulip finally get reunited, which is amazing, mm-hmm. by the way, the story of, like, you know, them meeting up in New York and, like, their kind of love story, and you know what this is a fairy tale, and they're dancing on the streets in the snow in the middle of New York. Mm-hmm. That's fucking awesome. I don't give a shit. That's fucking badass, dude, you know what I mean? And then the next issue is, like, you know, there's a fucking doorbell, and they think that Amy's coming home, and he opens the fucking door, and it's Cassidy.
Right.
And it's like, oh, Jesus. You know what I mean? This is a confrontation. Turns out to not actually be the confrontation between the two. But that confrontation between them two becomes like, that becomes like the crescendo of the book. That becomes the finale of the fucking book, as opposed to, like, you know, it almost seems like his, you know, finding down God, you know what I mean? Or finding God and making him pay for his sins just totally becomes a secondary thing. Yeah, as a matter of fact, he sends someone else entirely to deal with God and, you know, in that situation, you know?
I think that's kind of meant to be gay and philosophical for a minute. I think that's all about how life ends up. It's the shit that you put the most importance on, like, in your head. That's never the shit that your life comes down to. It always comes down to the shit like you're dealing with every day.
Well, and, you know, that's something that I was saying earlier. You know, life is messy, man. And that ending, while it wasn't a nice, you know, Christmas wrap bow on top, yay, it's all taken care of. Everything got resolved. Everything.
Well, fucking close.
Well, in a very unexpected way and in a non-traditional way. Because, like you say, you know, Jesse doesn't finish his quest. He doesn't do what he set out to do. Yeah. But that's okay.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
There's still a great climax. The characters have still gone on their journey.
Yeah, yeah. And everything's still just the point you made is that, he went on this giant quest and he realized, you know, that, like, that's not the journey that he wanted to be on in the fucking first place. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. that, if it cost him Tulip, then it wasn't fucking worth it. You know what I mean? And, right. and you know, that's fucking awesome, dude. That's, you know, that's 10 times fucking cooler than, like, you know, him beating the shit out of fucking God. You know what I mean? Like, we do get our resolution with God or whatever, but, you know, how do you guys feel about the Cassidy ending? You know what I mean? Like, does he do? I mean, because is it a second? You know, it's like on the surface, it's like, oh, he's getting a second chance, but, like, isn't he getting like a 15th chance? Isn't he getting like 100th? Right? Yeah, isn't he getting like his 24th chance really here? You know,
well, he's getting his,
obviously, you know, he's no longer, you know,
a vampire. He's getting his first chance as a man.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
This thing that this vampirism that he's been able, you know, like you were just saying, to use as a crutch for his bad behavior all through the series, that's gone.
Vampirism. You know what I mean? Like, this is the thing. That, like, you know, all these people want to achieve, you know what I mean? It's just like this excuse for him to be a piece of shit.
You know, and I think when reading that, I remember
wish I had an excuse.
I remember reading it originally.
Amen.
and then seeing that he came back and be like, ah, what the fuck? You know, seriously, did they give this guy? But, you know, looking at it now and after reading it recently, it's like you said, he's not going to have that crutch anymore. His life is completely different now. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's nobody. He's not a vampire. He is not all powerful. He can be hurt, but he has no life. Nothing.
Yeah.
And he's starting from scratch, but he's got nothing going for him right now. Nothing.
Well, bear in mind also, you know, when they give us the flashback story on Cassidy, as a youth in Ireland, he's a mealy-mouthed little nobody.
Yeah,
I mean,
his
brother's telling him what to do.
The coolest thing about that story, coolest and crazy thing about the Cassidy's origin story, is the whole time I thought Cassidy was his older brother.
Right.
You know what I mean? The whole time I thought Cassidy was the one who was, like, sure of himself and kicking ass, and, you know what I mean, and seeing the truth, and, you know what I mean? Like, he was the strong fucking, you know what I mean, like, brave one. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't. He was the weak younger brother who, like, followed along like a fucking sheep. You know what I mean?
Followed along
he
like
was
a
the
sheep.
One that needed to be saved all the fucking time, you know? And, like, that was brilliant. That was brilliant.
Well, and it fits the character and the development of the character perfectly.
And
I mean, you've got
behavior.
This guy said he's nothing. He's a nobody. He's got to have his brother, you know, get him out of these scrapes. Tell him what to do. Tell him who to believe in.
Yeah.
And then he is endowed with this awesome power. He can live forever. He's strong.
The power to not give a fuck.
And
which is basically
does
just like
what a lot of very weak people do when they find themselves empowered. He abuses the fuck out of it. And he's able to abuse the fuck out of it for the next 100 years.
It's just like that, like, it's his big brother all over again. You know what I'm saying? Like, after his big brother's gone, then it's like his vampirism's his big brother. You know what I'm saying? Something not really to hide behind, but to, you know, fight his battles for him.
That's right.
Become an excuse to fucking blame shit on and, you know, everything.
Right.
It's like we've said a bunch of times, you know, with the whole, you know, what superpower do you want or how would you behave? none of us would be fucking Superman if we had fucking powers. We'd all be fucking douchebags with powers. And that's basically what Cassidy was, you know, is he kept it much more real with somebody that got into a situation like that.
Well, right. There's no superpower that's awesome enough to get me to put on spandex. I'll talk about that right off the bat. But
I got a 20.
That's right. I don't know. But, I mean, that fits Cassidy perfectly. And believe it or not, by the end of the story, I still was not thinking that Cassidy was an irredeemable douchebag.
No.
That is not where you're at with that.
No, and that's the thing that hurts you the fucking most Cassidy stuff. Yeah, you know what I mean? Is that like
you want to?
You love him. You know what I mean? You love that dude, man. Fuck you, dude. How could you fucking do that to us? You son of a bitch. Yeah. You know. And I mean, there's stuff in that book where he's just downright fucking evil, dude. With Tulip Man,
when he
hangs up the phone on Amy and shit. You know what I mean? Like, and
he's just a
piece of shit.
Well, and you know he's tightroping this gray area with Tulip, right? Where she's like, "Give me some more pills," and he's like, "Okay." And, you know, and he's able to say through the whole thing, he's like, "I wasn't giving her pills. She was doing what she wanted to do the whole time," and he's right. But then Jesse comes back with, "You knew what the fuck was going on, and you were letting it happen because you wanted to keep her around," and he's right too. And once again, that's life. It's complicated. It's messy. There are different ways to look at these things. Personally, I tend to fall into the Jesse camp on this one where, yeah, he was acting like a douchebag. Yeah. But, you know, it's kind of hard to go ahead and put him in front of a firing squad at that point.
Yeah.
Even though he has been such a douchebag.
Certainly, you know, the choices he made, while they're horrible, are unfortunately real choices. I think
you laid it out perfectly, though, because we've all been in that situation either with ourselves or somebody else. Where somebody does some shit like that, you're like, dude, didn't we make some progress? Haven't we evolved a little bit? Then you go and pull this fucking shit.
Right.
And it was like that constantly with that character. It's like, all right, I thought we took some steps forward, and you just jumped back about eight years.
You think this is like a road trip to find God and make him answer all this stuff, you know what I mean? And just like along the way, it's just fucking not, you know what I mean? And you know, what winds up being that picture of the three of them together on his fucking, you know, on his what the fuck do you call that?
Dashboard. Thing,
on his dashboard, yeah. Sure.
Right.
You know what I mean? Just, it's, you know, hopefully he'll never forget that shit, you know what I mean? And like everything he fucking went through to like get to that point. What you think is going to be, you know, what you think Cassie is going to be the comic relief vampire.
Right.
You know what I mean? And
he winds up being so much more. You know, we've almost forgotten to mention that along the way in the trip, they run into the voodoo priest and his girlfriend who are not down with Cassidy at all.
Yeah.
They're telling them, like, look, and they say as much. Like, it's only a matter of time.
You know, it's the same thing you said. You say he's not down. He is down with Cassidy at all. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He loves Cassidy. You know what I mean? He's just like, that dude's just going to fuck you over, man.
Yeah,
I mean, he's like, I love that
time,
dude. He's just going to fuck you over. He shows up. He helps them. And it costs him again. But like... but he still showed up.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? He still met Cassidy. And it's like, that's tough, man. That's fucking tough, man. You know, does that guy deserve a second chance? You know, like, I don't know, but...
We've all given friends like that a second and third chance.
Thank you.
Yeah. But
now that we're talking about anybody in particular, Trey.
It's brilliant, you know, that, you know, the ending of the Jesse and Cassidy story, you know, where basically Jesse starts, you know what I mean? He starts bawling, you know, the whole story. The guy can never, ever cry, you know, and you know, at the most important moment of his fucking life, fucking, you know, he fucking finally starts to cry and shit. It's so like not a cowboy moment, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which was a point that, you know, I made earlier to Robert when he was saying something dumb. But, but yeah, you know, it's like, so you have this crazy non-cowboy moment, you know, where this guy's kind of like, I'll fucking change. If this is going to cost me, then, you know, I got some things I need to work on myself, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then they ride off into the sunset, just like the end of a cowboy movie, you know, fucking awesome.
That was like one of the great things that we talked about is that, like we said earlier, nobody's the same as when they started the book. And, you know, like we keep kind of making that Western connotation as far as what the book kind of reminds us of. And like you said, old classic John Wayne Western, Clint Eastwood John Wayne Western character wouldn't have made that same transformation.
Right.
He wouldn't be crying at the end
of
it. Oh,
no.
No way.
But he kind of turns it, like Robert said something about Shane earlier. He turns in from Shane to the kid crying for Shane.
Right.
Like he makes that transition and the cowboy hero never does that shit.
Well, let me ask you guys this. Do any of you...
Which, by the way, is way cooler than if he didn't do that shit.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Do any of you have any desire to see any of these characters revisited in any way, shape, or form? Or should DC continue its path, which seems to be to leave them alone?
I say it's done.
I definitely say leave them alone.
I'm sorry, go ahead. No, I was going to say, and don't let certain people make an HBO series of it. Go ahead.
God.
I would only say if it's... I mean, it's like we said with a lot of things.
Where you can't
imagine somebody else putting their hands on it because it was so much about Innocent Dylan.
Yeah.
If they decided they had something else to tell,
right?
You know, go for it.
Yeah. But I don't even know because there's a lot of times where a story will sit idle like that where it's done, where it's got its ends.
Are you telling me you wouldn't read a sex detective story? Because I would. You know.
I'm trying to ask myself the
further adventures of Tulip and Jesse? No, I like them riding off into the sunset.
But what about...
No, leave them alone.
Yeah, but what about like the Saint of Killers? Would you read something about the Saint of Killers?
I'll tell you what, I don't think the things that I have read, the ancillary, you know, Saint of Killers stuff that I have read, you know what I mean, like have been hit and miss, you know what I mean? Like one of them I liked, one of them I hated, you know, like all the, you know, the TC Jody stuff, you know, all the stuff outside of that story, I think like, you know, just gets diluted and not quite as cool, man. Not quite as cool. So stay the fuck away from Preacher, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
I would. Well, let me ask this question then. What is Preacher's place in comic history? What's his place in the comic?
I'll tell you, very important. I think it's very high on the list of books that I would choose to represent this medium.
Yeah. I don't know how many times I recommended it to people that don't read comics.
And we say that, you know, like people that don't read comics, you know what I'm saying? Like, this is just an amazing story that whether or not it's told in comic form or fucking movie form or fucking television form, if this story was told exactly like this, it would always be just as amazing because the things about this story that really make this story, you know what I mean, friendships and fucking betrayals and, you know, duty and honor and, you know, and revenge and love and all that stuff is there, you know what I mean? And it's just told the way that it's told, that story is I think, about as good as comics get. And you know, one of my favorite things about it is, you know, that it has a beginning, a middle, and an end.
I think it's one of the books that started to pull, to kind of pull the 90s out of its creative funk.
Give it over here.
Agreed. I think it brought, like, we see a lot more stuff, you know, obviously not the same, but in the same vein as far as storytelling where, like you said, somebody had a big story to tell that they had an idea for all of it. They had that place they wanted to take it and some stops they wanted to make along the way instead of just being kind of your generic textbook comedy.
Those are my favorite, man. I love to start a story that I know is going to have an end. I love it. I enjoy reading ongoing also, but when I know a story is going to have an end, I just get that much more into it.
Kind of, you know, having read Preacher, not really in the context of some of the shittier stuff that was coming out at the time that it was coming in or whatever. What do you think? Does this stand to you as a story that's memorable throughout the comic books?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of Vertigo stuff that was coming out right around that time was throwing shock value things at you or kind of like alternative culture ideas at you.
Was this the same time as like Animal Man and all that kind of shit?
Yeah, I think it was on the tail end of Animal Man, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
But I honest to God, I expected it to be just another Vertigo book that way. We're going to throw you indie culture ideas. We're going to throw you... It's like, I know that stuff. I don't need to see it again, and I'll let it go by. When I began to read it, it started off, and I thought that was exactly what I was going to get. And it was like, all right. Well, I've got to do this show about Preacher, so I'll finish this first trade and go from there. And then sticking with it through that stuff, you know, wound up being pleasantly surprised again and again and again, whether it was a shock value moment, whether it was a kick-ass one-liner, whether it was a moment of wonderful character development. Something always kept me in that, and as it progressed, I just found myself enveloped in Preacher, and it's great, and definitely one of the best things Vertigo has ever put its name on, period. Definitely.
I'd have to say it's my favorite Vertigo thing that I've ever read. We've kind of mentioned it. We might as well go ahead and dive into it for a second as we wrap things up. Our buddy, our close personal friend, Mark Steven Johnson, is still signed on to head a Preacher series for HBO.
I still don't understand what his role is, though.
He's executive producer.
He's the guy that's going to ruin it.
And he wrote the treatment for like the first two episodes. What he introduced to HBO originally, according to what I read today on Wikipedia, was that he wanted to, like, he gave whoever the executive producer over there, he gave them the series and said, I want an hour-long episode, and I want to do each issue as an hour-long episode.
I've heard that.
And that, and then Ennis has basically said, you know what, you don't have to follow, I've already sold my rights, you don't have to follow the book, whatever, mm-hmm. and maybe you shouldn't. Maybe you should add some additional things, do some different things to make it more TV-friendly or whatever. But the last thing I've read, supposedly, they're still going forward with kind of an hour yeah. type story.
You know, isn't that just pointless? I mean, shouldn't you just read the comic if it's going to be the exact same fucking thing?
Yeah, I mean, does that make the TV series necessary?
I got an argument for that because a lot of people are going to see this that would never fucking pick up a comic otherwise. Not saying that it might get them, you know, get a lot. Not saying that it's going to get a lot of people to buy them or start reading a lot of comics or anything like that, but it's at least going to, you know.
And the Max.
I've got no problem with it being made into a miniseries. You know, a miniseries, I think, is going to serve the story a lot better.
I still like the Max.
Yeah, I think there's too much for a movie. I don't know about the episode an hour trying to do the whole series.
It's going to be tough. They're going to have to cut out a whole lot, man.
It'll get canceled before it gets to the end.
That's a good point.
Well, but what bothers me is that this guy who's the executive producer has made a reputation for himself as a guy who understands comic book movies. This is a guy who didn't understand Daredevil, and it's not like it's that fucking hard to understand Daredevil.
Yeah, especially when
Daredevil is not...
Get it laid out for you, asshole.
A rather overweight Ben Affleck.
Hey, I'm fucking Ben Affleck.
You're fucking Ben Affleck?
No shit.
I'm fucking
Seth
Rogen.
Fuckle Keys is for my bean.
It's a video. You haven't seen the thing yet?
No, I can't.
You haven't seen I'm fucking Matt Damon?
Yeah.
Okay, Jimmy Kimmel made one back. I'm fucking Ben Affleck. You haven't seen it?
No.
I'll show it to you. It's a riot.
I don't really care.
I know you don't, but I'm going to make you watch it anyway.
You to the chair.
But what I'm saying is this guy, you know, doesn't seem to understand some very basic comic archetype kind of characters. How in the world are you supposed to sell me on the fact that he understands Preacher and how it should be done? Yeah. I mean, that's something that's a little more complex.
Hey, I mean, it's one of those things where
you would think
you would be encouraged by him saying that he's talked to Garth Ennis and they have an understanding about things. You would think that would be encouraging. But then again, I remember reading interviews with this guy before Daredevil came out where he's talking about how much he loved the source material and really got and understood the character, and Affleck. And then the movie they came out was like, have you read the book?
Yeah.
Right.
The
stuff that he picked up on was all the wrong stuff.
Yeah.
Right. It's just like,
well, he did the same thing with visual
with Ghost
stuff.
Rider.
He picked up on all the wrong
stuff. Yeah, wouldn't
stuff?
It be cool if it was raining and then he could see stuff with his blind supervision thing?
Right.
Yeah, that's exactly what the moment you should have in the movie. So I don't know. I definitely agree with you that it works better as a miniseries, but I don't think it necessarily needs to work as a television or movie series, period.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, maybe the answer to, you know, if we want people to appreciate Preacher, maybe we need to get them in the freaking comic book shops and off the couch.
Fucking A right, dude.
Woo!
Back on the couch to read a comic.
Well, guys, good show. Preacher, I think it's safe to assume we all give it 2 great, big, ginormous thumbs up.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
highly recommend it.
Yep. And like Adam said, the great thing about this is it's something that you can go out and fucking buy all of it.
Yeah.
You can have the beginning and the end, and if you're like Devin, read it all in one sitting.
Yeah.
Yep.
Definitely one of my favorite books ever.
By far.
Probably recommended it more than any other book I've ever recommended to people. And we out.
Later.